Wake up, dummies. It's Monday, and that means we're going to run you through everything that happened in the Major League Baseball over the weekend. We had five whole sweeps and a whole lot of fun pitching performances to talk about on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world. Who knew that Big Paul was going to riz up the Cubs? I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And Skeens did the thing.
Is that what happened on Friday afternoon? You know, it's not often we've done, you know, we do these weekend recaps every Monday morning, and it's decently rare that what happens on Friday sustains as like our lasting memory of the weekend, especially literally Friday afternoon. But I think what Paul Skeens did on Friday afternoon, shortly after we recorded Friday's episode, was indeed the headliner for us over the weekend. That is going to be one of our main topics as we review the weekend that was. We had five sweeps. We have, plus the Padres haven't lost yet this weekend. They have an interesting time down in Atlanta. The Pirates taking three of four over the Cubs, as we will talk about with not just Skeens, but Jones and Keller looking awesome, as well as the rest of the series around the league. And then at the end, Jake, we have some massive, massive news. Does this qualify as hashtag some personal news? Kind of. It's not. It's veering in that direction, but it's not really about Jake. But it's not about Jake. And we will get to all of that later on in this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Good morning, Jake. It is a big week. I am home. I am in the basement of my parents' house where I spent the first year of the pandemic. So, you know, every time I record something down here, I'm just, you know, flash back to the goofy leaderboards of the 2020 season.
In mom's basement, where all baseball bloggers, writers, and podcasters deserve to be. It feels like home because it is. Jordan, let us begin not in Washington, D.C., but here in New York City, where the Yankees are on a W7.
Yeah. Well, Jake, I'm still in 2020, but Luke Voigt's got to be leading the way, right? I mean, Luke Voigt, the greatest slugger I've ever seen. Is that what's going on with the Yankees? Is that why they're so good this year?
That's exactly what's going on. It's funny you bring up Luke Voigt, because on Saturday afternoon, one of my Little League kids who doesn't not look something like Luke Voigt, we were talking about the Yankees, and he said, "Coach, I don't like Anthony Rizzo. Luke Voigt was better." And I said, "If you just watched baseball in 2020, you are completely and utterly correct about that." But no, the Yankees won without Luke Voigt. They beat the White Sox three times over the weekend. It is nice when things in Major League Baseball, really in life, go how you expect them to, right?
Yeah.
I said this a bunch last week. I'm stupid, and I like when the predictable occurs, and the Yankees pummeling the White Sox three times was exactly that. Didn't have to think too hard. They win 6-1, they win 7-2, and they win the first game of the series 4-2. The big news, though, for the Yankees, I would say there are two main things from the weekend. One, two homers each from Stanton, Judge, and Soto. A lot was made of Aaron Judge's cold start. His OPS, I believe, is 973.
Like, just fine.
That's a hell of a cold start, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say, but then you know it was the Yankees weekend when John Birdie's going yard, right? I mean, that's when you know you are the definitively better team. I know we had joked about, oh, the White Sox getting one would really, you know, set the panic in for the Yankees. But instead, a resounding sweep. Corey Jolks could not save this White Sox team, although he does look like he might be adding a little bit of juice to this lineup. But yeah, the Yankees pitching just continues to roll. Obviously, Judge and Soto will continue to get the attention. Not that they don't deserve it, but it is this starting pitching that has been some of the best in baseball without the reigning Cy Young, right? And I think we had a conversation about this on last week's episode. I don't know if it ended up making it to the podcast, but I am really interested about what happens with this Yankees rotation as Gerrit Cole hopefully comes back. Because while, yes, the obvious thing, if you just look at the workloads and the experiences, that Luis Gil will go to the bullpen, and that's fine. But Luis Hale's been awesome. I know 14 strikeouts in one walk against the White Sox is not the same as doing it against other baseball teams, but he has been tremendous. Now, he threw, what, 4 innings last year? So even though the Yankees aren't saying there is an innings limit, I have to imagine they will be keeping an eye on that. Schmidt has also been fantastic. So good problem to have. Yankees pitching are, but the Yankees pitching, I would say, is a bigger reason why we view them as clearly one of the best teams in baseball. It's not Judge and Soto, in my opinion. I mean, it is that, but it's not only that.
Yeah, this unit has been really good at run prevention for a while now. I think, like, with Luis Gil, he should be quite, like, MLB should have, you know, there's the bereavement list and there's the paternity list. There should be, like, a paid vacation list, which I know is kind of the phantom IL.
Like, hey, bro, we don't need you right now. Like, take it easy. Yeah. He's earned it too, right? This isn't even like a situation where it's like the fact that he's already gone 5-1. They must have won at least 7 or 8 of his starts by now, right?
Right. Like Luis Gil should be able to go to Cancun for 2 weeks on the Yankees' dime and just stay in shape whenever Gerrit Cole comes back. And then, you know, if they need him in the bullpen, they need him in the bullpen. But if you want to reduce guys' workloads, like, I guess I understand that, but don't make them go to like Scranton for being too good.
I'm not going to
better
be
than you thought.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, Spencer Turnbull, right? Mm. Who got bumped from the Phillies rotation when Taiwan Walker got back. He should be able to go to vacation for a little bit. He earned it.
You know? I agree, especially since Spencer Turnbull in the bullpen has not been awesome so far. You know, it looks like he would be better off sitting on the beach.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Just a thought. But yeah, Luis Gil's been awesome. Carlos looking good again, generally. And yeah, now we have this fantastic week of pitching coming up in the Bronx with the Mariners coming to town for 4.
It is worth saying, though, Thomas Pham.
Yeah.
Tommy freaking Pham, who the White Sox signed a little bit late. Tommy Pham, the epitome of intensity. He has been freaking amazing for Chicago. He has a 144 OPS plus. He is at 861 ops. He is homered 2 times. He's hitting 333. He's going to get traded. He should have been traded already, if we're being real.
Right. No,
he will be in the postseason. Like, Tommy Pham is going to play postseason games this year. Yes. He's going to have a big hit. Yes. And it was funny. Someone asked me the other day, like, why did you go to the stadium to see the White Sox on Friday? And I said, because half of their clubhouse is going to be in October for somebody else. And so I want to talk to a couple of those players.
Right. It's like, yes, the Yankees will be there too, in all likelihood. But it's nice to know who else will be traded and how soon, right? How soon will they pull the trigger? Will they start feeling like Peter Bendix with the Marlins, where it's like, I ain't waiting for July. I just got a great offer for Tommy Pham now. I would imagine it is still going to take it to July. But yeah, I haven't quite dug into like who makes the most sense for Tommy Pham right now, but we will be having those conversations at some point this summer. Yankees sweep the White Sox, no surprise there. The Royals sweep the A's, no surprise there either, as the A's are plummeting back to the bottom of the baseball standings as the Royals just resoundingly taking care of business, as both the Guardians and Royals sweep the Guardians over Twins was much more impactful. But since the Royals and A's are on here first, I just think that, again, the Royals pitching's been awesome. That is what has convinced me that they are a good baseball team. I know that the A's have been, the offense has been pretty horrible recently. So again, as we just said about the Yankees against the White Sox, maybe not the same, but no, I've just been so impressed. I mean, Seth Lugo, man, like Seth Lugo, who is now, I believe, leading baseball in ERA. He's leading baseball in innings pitched. He's leading baseball in ERA plus. He has been, I was pretty bullish on that. Like, I thought that was a great signing, but I didn't think it was going to be this good. And so the idea that Seth Lugo has improved is in some ways not that surprising. I mean, remember, last year was really his first year as a major league starting pitcher over a full season. And, you know, I guess he did a little bit as a Mets earlier in his career. But you can tell that he's still kind of figuring himself out as a pitcher, even though he's 34. And I think that's a really cool development for him.
34, which might as well be baseball dead. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're like, you know, getting the ground at that age. That's what they say. Mm-hmm. They get a spectacular start from Reagans on Friday. Lugo on Saturday and Singer on Sunday. Reagans, who, despite how good the Royals have pitched this year, hasn't really been the same. as he was a year ago, but he looks sensational against the A's. Again, we understand it's the A's, but Lugo, Singer, and Reagans, that's legitimate. That is no playing around. Brian Sweeney, who is Kansas City's pitching coach, they brought him over from Cleveland, where he was a big part of their pitching development stuff. He has had an enormous impact. The Royals, Jordan, from 2018 to the end of 2023, had the second worst team ERA in baseball. Mm-hmm. Okay. Better than only the
Colorado
Rockies, who play on the moon.
Yep.
And so you could deduce that the Royals had the worst pitching for about 6 years. Okay. And for six years.
I'm glad you mentioned the Rockies, because the Royals do not play on the moon. They have sat as a pitcher's park. Right. And they were giving up so many runs anyway.
And now, so far this year, they have the second most F-war, okay, amongst starting pitchers. Mm-hmm. They're fourth in starting pitching ERA. They're ninth in total ERA. Their pitching is legitimately good, and I do agree it does. They win me over more and more every week. Big offensive weekends from Salvador Perez, who is just eternal. And Michael Garcia starting to get a little bit hot.
Nice Vinny, to see him. He's did you watch? Slower start for him.
So let's just quickly talk about Vinny. So Vinny is going through it, kind of a tough stretch. I believe he did over 14, broke that Schneid on Saturday. And I'm looking at the box score last night, and I see Pasquantino, 3 RBI, pinch hit triple. I'm
like, what?
And I'm like, what?
Is that the same Vinny Pasquantino?
I was like, I need to see what this looked like. And I texted Vinny, you hit a triple? He said, you said it. I said, can't wait to see this highlight. Did the right fielder have a heart attack? He said, no, I'm just a burner. Great day at the yard. I worked for 2 minutes.
Did you see the quote that Vinny gave and Salvi? I retweeted this from Ann Rogers, one of my favorite MLB beats. She does a great job. Ann tweeted, Salvador Perez was impressed with Vinny Pasquantino's triple. Quote, he runs like a truck. Sorry, Vinny. And then Vinny said, quote, depends on what kind of truck and if you're moving downhill or uphill. I'm going to assume he meant an 18-wheeler going downhill with no brakes. So thank you, Salvi. Thank you, Vinny.
There's a great clip of the triple where, like, Vinny, he, like, hits it down the right field line, and then it goes to the high home camera shot of the runner scoring from first. And then you see Vinny kind of bumbling around second, like, turning towards third. And you're like, is he on a treadmill?
Here's the thing. I just love that, like, Salvador Perez, who is not that old, has sustained from the beginning of his career where he could, like, you know, make fun of Lorenzo Cain and all of his, like, that era of the Royals when Vinny was just, like, some bum at Old Dominion. And even before that, you know, like, in high school, to where now, Salvi gets to make fun of him, you know, running when he makes triple. It's just great. It's an amazing thing.
Can I ask a serious question?
Please.
Am I faster than Vinny?
So let's see. So Vinny, I mean, we've sort of had this conversation before in terms of, like, what is your percentile sprint speed? And
right.
Vinny is at 14th percentile. So that's not the bottom. Are you 14th percentile major league sprint speed? Maybe on your best day. Yeah.
I'm going to go out to a turf field.
Okay.
I mean, maybe when we're at the combine, Jordan, I'll run the sprint.
That's a good idea. I mean, I was going to say, like, right, we have a time as to how long it took Vinny to get to third, right? So you could just go do that on a regulation size field and see.
It's kind of a lose-lose, though, for Vinny, because either I'm faster than him and that's horrible, or he's faster than me and it's like, I hope so. You know, we play sports for money.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, it's not like he's going to, you know, line up with you. Like, you're going to have to go time it and verify it.
I'm going to have to take this into my own hands. Yeah. You're right. But go ahead.
I just want to say, like, Vinny, I know he had a struggle there. Like, it was a slower start. He picked it back up. Like, the numbers are still there. He is not the batter I'm worried about on this offense. You know, I still need to see a lot more. I will say Michael Massey's someone that I've been impressed by. He has definitely brought something to that offense, because, I mean, I got to say, like, the veterans that I was like, why are you signing these guys? Frazier, Hampson, Renfro, like, they've been terrible. Like, I mean, maybe they've had a few big hits here or there. I know Renfro's had some defense. Frazier's had some clutch hits, but it's like they have not helped. Now maybe they're helping in the room. I'm sure was part of it too, but I don't know. They still have a lot of questions on offense for sure.
Let's stay in the American League Central, where the Cleveland Guardians took all three games from the Twins. In my mind, Jordan, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think you watched more of this than I did. This felt more like the Twins losing than the Guardians winning.
Yeah, I mean, Jose Ramirez, you know, he guys has his bobblehead day over the weekend. I know they're aware of the City Connects for the first time. We haven't talked about their City Connects. I think they're solid. But Ramirez, think about it this way. I mean, how often is Yoan Duranga going to allow two home runs in the same weekend? You know, that's not going to happen often. Now you could say, who cares? Like, that's credit to the Guardians. Like, that's
someone's got to
be doing something right. You know, Ramirez, homers against Duran, and then Will Brennan, a walk-off homer on Sunday. And yeah, I mean, Minnesota, who was just swept at home last week by New York, you know, they're kind of back on a bit of a skid. They come to DC. I will actually be there later today, seeing the Twins and Nationals on Monday. But I don't know. I think what you're saying is not totally wrong, because the Twins are really not playing very well right now. But they did their work to get back into the mix. But this was a really, really nice showing from Cleveland, and a reminder that they are, in some ways, they are the team that deserves the benefit of the doubt the most, you know, in this division. And I think that they show that this weekend.
Twins have had an L5, a W12, and an L6, and it's May 20th.
Yeah, that's what it's felt like. We'll see with them. But no, I
Royce
think Cleveland,
Lewis come back.
Yeah. Yes. It seems like that's maybe going to happen soon. Maybe Rocco will give an update on that this week. That would be nice to hear, because yeah, it's just offensively, they really need something, and they're just very into right now. But hey, credit to Cleveland. Jose Ramirez is amazing. I know the overall numbers don't look super awesome yet, but when you have him and Naylor, like that is an awesome, awesome 1-2. And when Kwan comes back, I think that's a big part of it as well. So maybe I feel bad kind of hand waving away. Like, this is a really impressive sweep here, but yeah, I think the Twins are in a bad place, and Cleveland took advantage. And last thing is that Cleveland, take a look at this picture. The Cleveland Guardians Twitter handle, they are one to troll, and they've had some good content. They've had some questionable content over the years. They posted a photo of what appears to be the Twins summer sausage in the trash can. With the caption, guess the luck ran out. You Photoshop more than I do. Is this Photoshop? I think it is.
It is 100% Photoshop, Jordan.
Yes, but it's good. It's good content. It's funny. So do you think because it's Photoshopped, it's kind of BS? Like, do you think this is kind of like?
So here's my thought. Okay, it's almost too realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Twitter account has some level of journalistic integrity that it must uphold. Now, not nearly as much as like real reporters, freaking duh.
This is why I wanted to bring this up.
However, I think a cartoon sausage, or it needed to be more obviously Photoshopped, because you could look at this photo at first glance, like on a phone without zooming in, and actually think that the Twins threw it away. And then, you know, they would have to ask Rocco Baldelli about it tomorrow. And that I like the idea. I would have liked it to be more obviously fake.
I think I agree, because I do think that, like, this is right in the line of, like, the journalistic integrity, just, like, whatever, misinformation on Twitter is a problem, right? And so, but you have to say, the stakes here are still, like, let's not get too serious, Jake. Like, we're talking about sausage.
In a trash can.
In a trash can, you know? So I don't want to push too far and be like, oh my gosh, like, this is a moral failing by the Cleveland Guardians Twitter account. However, I do think I agree with you that, like, it is pushing it a little bit too real. But maybe not. Maybe people say, oh my God, guys, relax. Like, this is hilarious.
It is fake news. Right. This is literally fake news.
That's what I'm saying. And so while the stakes are lower because we're talking about a lucky summer sausage that has been carried from city to city, I did think it was interesting. Anyway, two more sweeps. Let's do, again, the Nationals quickly. Nationals getting swept by the Phillies. The Phillies, who... So you mentioned this last week, talking about...
Talking
about the Phillies and the Braves, and how, okay, do we think that the Phillies actually have a real chance to win the division? And you made the point that the Phillies' strength of schedule has been terrible. And that was a totally fair point. You said that that's really why they've gotten to this point. And while the Braves have maybe been slightly disappointing, but still really good, and the Phillies have been awesome, like that is a reason. And I said, you know what? I think that that's fair, but I didn't really look into it. Then I realized, not that I didn't believe you, but the very basic stat here, which is like kind of shocking. Like I honestly don't normally pay that close attention to the record against 500 teams or above. Like that's not a stat that I particularly look at that closely during the course of a major league regular season.
Yeah.
However, this is really staggering. Okay. The Phillies have played. Now this is a stat that changes, right? Because it's not at the time that you play them. It is constantly adjusting, and that's relevant.
It's whenever you say the stat.
Right. Okay. So basically when I say the Phillies are blah, blah, blah against 500 teams or above, that's against teams that are 500, or if the, you know, they played the Yankees, you know, when the Yankees were 0-10, but the Yankees are now over 500, that still counts as a game against an above 500 team. Okay. So just to be clear. Now, however, the Phillies against 500 teams or above this year are 4-2. And three of those wins are a sweep against the 500 San Diego Padres. So think about that. They have played three games, a serious season opening series loss against the Braves. Those are the only games they've played against a team that is currently above 500. That is pretty shocking as we are almost at June.
ESPN, I think, has their SOS stuff pretty good on a leaderboard. It is hilarious. I believe their opponent's strength of schedule is like 450 something, and the next closest team is at like 480 something. It is jarring how bad their schedule has been. They've won the games they needed to, not to take anything away from the Phillies. They've racked up the W's. They've given themselves the cushion that they've deserved it. However, the schedule has been bad. I also think the NL is bad. I think that's a big part of it. There's this really soft middle to the National League. And the Phillies have only played three games against the Braves. They haven't played the Cubs. They haven't played the Brewers. They haven't played the Dodgers, right? And those are the good teams. Everyone else in the National League is like, not that great. And they haven't played any of the good teams in the American League yet. And so that's kind of where we're at. That's why we're at here. Quickly on this series, Trey Turner going out created a void. He's still on the IL. In his place, a lot of those plate appearances have gone to Edmundo Sosa and Cody Clemens, both of whom have just been like really, really good. Whit Merrifield, I think, is maybe a little past it, but Clemens stepping up with a game tying homer with the Phillies down to their last out on Saturday, and then a go ahead two run double in the fifth inning of a tie game on Sunday. Sure. Like Cody Clemens, they needed a lefty on the bench.
Yeah.
Whatever, man. Love it.
Yeah. I mean, I think Thompson gave a quote at some point. And you hear this sometimes with guys that are like on the fringe of the roster that they keep bouncing up and down, where he's like, yeah, he's a major league player. And so, like, we're not surprised he's having success. Yeah, sure. But he really didn't have that much success last year. I mean, he had a 644 OPS in 49 games last year in the big leagues, and he didn't do much. He was even worse when he got it run with the Tigers in 2022. So I don't know. You know, whatever. This is one of those things too, right? Where it's like, what, he just gave him this weekend? Great. That's already like, if Cody Clemens is helping you win a baseball game, every game is important, especially when we're talking about this race with the Braves, even if it's against the Nats. These are massive, massive RBIs.
And Cody Clemens, his heater that one year in college has stuck in my mind. Remember that with University of Texas?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was hot.
It's kind of a crazy. He had five homers as a freshman, five homers as a sophomore, and then 24 as a junior, which is also before the bats and balls were supremely juiced. So anyway, Phillies over Nationals. No surprise there. Giants over Rockies is our last completed sweep of the weekend. And this is very good to see because the Rockies was like, oh, gosh. Rockies are on fire. Are they gonna come after they just kicked the Padres' ass in San Diego? Are they gonna go up to San Francisco and do the same thing? Not quite. Because the Giants were like, guys, listen, I know it's been a tough start. I know we're all really injured, but we're still talking about the Rockies on the road. Let's not get too crazy here. And they whooped them. They looked like the better baseball team, which they should.
Three things here. The Giants injuries have really hit them hard in the outfield. So they've had to backfill a lot of stuff out there. Keylor Ramos looking pretty solid. He just feels like he's been a prospect in their system forever. He hit a homer. Luis Matos has gone out and played really good defense in center field with Jung Hoo Lee, now out for the year, which really sucks. Matos, I believe, also hit a home run over the weekend, back-to-back five RBI 11 RB, games.
Yeah, 11 RBIs over two games is pretty good.
And then Matt Chapman is getting hot. Mm. He was pretty iffy to start the season. Big games for him, I believe, on Friday and Saturday. I think he went like 4-for-4, 5-for-5 or something on Saturday. Matt Chapman getting hot. They need that. Again, the National League is still such an open question mark. No one really knows what's going on. But the Giants beating the Rockies is important for them. And then lastly, before we take a break, Padres taking the first two games in Atlanta. Great starts from Matt Waldron on Friday. And then Yu Darvish getting his 200th career win between the NPB and the MLB combined in Sunday Night Baseball. Kicking the crap out of the Braves. The Saturday game got rained out, so they're playing a doubleheader today. What a weird mop that would be if the Padres sweep the doubleheader today. That would be very bizarre. The Braves feel off. Mm-hmm. Something does feel weird. The offense hasn't quite been the same. Ronald got picked off three times last week and then lackadaisically dropped an easy fly ball.
Yes.
Last year, a lot of the conversation around Ronald was there's a renewed focus with him and like he's really locked in and there's an intensity that wasn't there. That so far this year has not been the case, frankly, right? And that's unfortunate because we all benefit when Ronald Acuna Jr. is playing with an edge. However, it is worth noting the Atlanta Braves have the exact same record through this many games as they did last year, and they won 104 games.
That is a good point. The two things on Ronald that I wanted to mention. One is last night, it was a Sunday Night Baseball game. They're talking about it. He drops that weird fly ball. It was the first kind of people kind of looking around like, damn, he really hasn't been very good this year. And Ronald talked about it after the game too. He was like, yeah, like I'm not good, but you know, I trust I'm going to turn around. He's got a 98 OPS plus. What really stands out is that he's back to striking out. Now, he's not striking out 30% of the time, but remember, so much of what was just unbelievable about his season last year is that he literally cut his strikeouts in half, which you just do not see Major League Baseball players do that far into their career. It doesn't happen. Like, if you can shave off a couple points here and there, that's great. Teams will be overjoyed if you can slice your strikeout rate a little bit. He cut it in half. He had one of the great seasons of the 21st century. Now he's back to striking out what he was doing basically before, which is, you know, around league average a little bit more. So it's not the only reason why he's been mid offensively, but that definitely stands out, I would say. And we'll see if he can kind of get that corrected.
All right, let's take a quick break. And when we return, we will boot up the Skeens hype machine because there hasn't been enough already. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. We had two opportunities over the weekend, two four-game sets, neither of which were a mop. Pirates taking 3 out of 4 from the Cubs in Wrigley Field. The Bucks rolling in to the north side in a big NL Central showdown and telling the Cubs to freaking beat it. Jared Jones was pretty good on Thursday. Paul Skeens was electrifying on Friday. Bailey Falter, 7 scoreless, I believe, on Saturday in a tough loss. Imanaga better. Shota is bananas. And then Mitch Keller, solid start Sunday. Pirates taking that one, winning 3 out of 4. Offense is looking better. Nick Gonzalez is swinging the bat well. Brian Reynolds is swinging the bat well. Andrew McCutchen had a good weekend.
Yeah.
Don't look deeper than that.
don't
do that. I know David Bednar blew another one on Saturday, but locked it down on Sunday. Holderman's been pretty good for them. Go ahead.
Well, I know that there was some controversy about the win on Saturday and the replay. And stuff. To kind of say blanket statement, we are basically never going to talk about this. And some people are like, what's wrong with you? This is so important. Controversial replay rulings in the regular season, you're really not going to hear us talk about it because it's not fun and I just don't find it that interesting.
Because it's also bad podcast content, right?
Yes. Like,
so what happened was
Yeah.
His hand, I didn't even see this play.
Right.
His hand like snuck in underneath.
Right. In this case, the tag was clearly applied. Whatever. The point is, it's not fun to talk about. It's unfortunate for some teams. Happens. Every team gets screwed on the replay at some point this season. When it happens in the playoffs, if we have to do it, we will. Otherwise, you're just not going to hear us talk about it. Anyway, I just wanted to acknowledge that because I know that was a lot of discourse on Saturday. It prevented the Pirates from, it could have been mop of the Cubs. Okay. That's fine. Yeah.
The scales of baseball justice over time even out. No one team is getting more screwed by umpires or replay than any other team. And if you believe otherwise, you think your team is particularly, you know, the recipient of misfortune.
That's fine. Send us an email. You're not getting empathy here. I'm sorry.
Like you got two guys who have, you know, spent time cheering for the Orioles and Mariners. Like we get it. Like we get misfortune, right?
Umpires are bad sometimes. Replays weird. It's fine. It's not
just
not
like players. Bad. Sometimes they're good and sometimes they're bad.
But Pirates pitching was outstanding, and like the Falter thing. Whatever. We're the low guys on Falter, but he's clearly has shown some real things here. Keller's the real one. I mean, that's the guy they've already extended. Clearly, a part of their future. As much as we talk about the hype with Jones and Skeens, and that's deserved. Keller's an all-star starter, you know, and when he's going well, that's a hell of a guy to have at the, apparently in the back of your rotation in the case of this weekend, which is very cool. But enough about those other guys. What Paul Skeens did on Friday was against the same team that he debuted against, right? Oh, well, what's going to happen? The league's going to have to adjust to them. They're going to see him better because they just saw him last time. And did you see what Skeens said ahead of the start?
Study up.
I think he said good luck.
Good luck.
He said, I think, you know, Hannah Mears, the dugout reporter, was like, yeah, what? How are you going to adjust? They're going to adjust you. They just saw you. And he's like, yeah, all right, good luck. And yeah, that's how he pitched. He was like, good luck here.
Good luck.
Here's
struck 100. Struck out the first 7 batters he faced. He did not allow a hit in 6 innings.
Yeah.
He struck out 11.
And by the way, the fact that he went back out there for the 6th when they were up by a bunch of runs felt like a Shelton. It felt like a gift from Shelton to us, to Paul Skeens. It was like, look, dude, obviously we don't need you to be pitching in the 6th inning anymore. And we also know you're not going to finish this no-hitter, but like, go back out there and do it again. And it was great. And it was just like, yeah, this is what it's supposed to look like to do it in Wrigley. Also, so right, think about what that means, right? Like your first Wrigley Day game as an NL Central opponent, and you're just like, yeah, here, what's up? And think about like the very casual Cubs fans who showed up to that game and were like, oh, like they got this big Skeens guy. Let's see what his deal is. It's like, oh my God, that must have been a hell of an experience for them.
100 pitches, which is notable because he was on an 80 pitch limit for his debut. And I would imagine was on some sort of limit under 100 for this game. And they simply were like, you know what? Screw it. Like,
this let's is send fun. Him back out. Derek Shelton's like, I'm having a good time.
Derek Shelton's like, this is lit. Am I going to stop this party from rolling on? I would also say that they're running a 6-man rotation right now, and so he's got an extra day between starts.
We'll see
probably
how long
helping
that lasts,
him.
But yeah, yeah.
It was just so.
And cool. Also, I will say too, you know, we talked about going into it, the contrast with him and Kyle Hendricks, who that ERA is still over 10. I don't want it to be over for Kyle Hendricks, but they are also a team that is probably going to have some difficult conversations to have with him at some point.
Sometimes it is time to say goodbye to the past. And I fear that we have reached this point with Kyle Hendricks. Hey, maybe, you know, a little midseason drive line, get that velo up.
And hey, sorry, Cubs fans, says, what the Imanaga is. I mean, he's setting all kinds of whatever. I don't have them in front of me right now, but, you know, lowest ERA through X career starts. Like, he has been unbelievable and so much fun. And by the way, too, like, it's like, okay, fine. Maybe Kyle Hendricks is moving on. Here's the guy throwing 91 miles an hour right past everybody.
Like, no one can touch it.
That's a great also version of that kind of pitching, which is super fun. So Cubs, not the best weekend. Not great. It's going to be okay. Pirates fans, they need something like that.
Did you see Paul Skeens, though? Did you see what he did? He, I know I may have mentioned this earlier, but he threw 6 innings and struck out 11 guys and did not allow a hit.
Yeah. Also, the Pirates are hosting Atlanta next weekend. So that will be a delightful showing. I don't know if he will pitch again on Friday. I bet he probably will Friday or Saturday. So we will see what happens. But Skeens is appointment viewing as it gets. The Dodgers taking 3-4 over the Reds of Cincinnati. Ohtani with his first Dodgers walk-off, I believe his first walk-off hit in like 4 years. I think it had been a long time since he had a walk-off.
He's just not clutch.
Yeah, that's definitely what it was. It wasn't, you know, the Angels not winning a lot of games. The Dodgers are better than the Reds. What a surprise. The Reds, after that walk-off loss, are now 1-11 in one-run games. Alexis Diaz did not have as bad of a weekend as his brother, but has been really not awesome. And that's been unfortunate. He's not the entire reason that the Reds are 1-11 one-run games. They've just found ways to win run-run games. You know, rallies coming up just short. I've seen a lot of those this season up close. That's been tough to watch. The other big development of the weekend is Walker Buehler looked excellent, looked just really, really, really good. And I wanted to bring that up because I know you released your first free agent power rankings that you are going to be doing over the course of the season, which you can check out over at Yahoo. And we had a conversation about where, I don't know where you ended up putting Buehler, but that was one where in your first pass of the list, he was a lot lower. And I was like, look, I understand it. We haven't seen enough yet, but this is someone who can, if I'm picking someone that can very easily work his way up the list in a very dramatic way, even with some other big pitchers on the list. I don't know where you ended up with it, but that's just someone that like every time he goes out there and looks like that, we will be reminded like, oh man, this guy might be setting himself up to get super paid again.
So it is worth noting that Buehler hadn't looked like that in his first two starts, right? This was his third start off the IL and he looked shaky and rusty in the first two starts. And for me, I wanted to see any glimpse of Walker Buehlering before I really pumped him up the list. I had him at 18 behind Yusei Kikuchi, behind Snell, behind Jordan Montgomery. I would say maybe this is overreacting. Literally just seeing him do it one time, I might jump him over a couple of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm not saying you guys, I'm not asking you to change it every day. I'm just bringing it up as a theme, as you know, we keep an eye on that because this is where, honestly, the timing of his Tommy John was specifically as it relates to his free agency was honestly about as good as you could hope because it's clearly plenty of time to get to full strength. He already took longer. Remember, he got the TJ in 22, right? So this has been a very lengthy rehab to the point where they've taken it so slow because they've been able to do that. And now he's going to look, I mean, because the stuff's been there. I agree he's looked rusty with some of the command, but that's what's really exciting. So yay, something going well for the Dodgers. Hooray.
All right, I'm going to turn on the warp speed. We're going to roll through some of these 2-1 series. We had the Jake versus Jordan BBQ Bowl, Orioles-Mariners. Orioles win on Friday. Mariners win a tight one on Saturday before the Orioles take the finale on Sunday. All three were really just good ball games. You know, Baltimore-Seattle. Friday,
much, but Saturday.
If you like the Orioles,
Saturday was Orioles. A fantastic game. Sunday was a great game too. Yeah.
However, this weekend was all about Gunnar Henderson, who homered in each game. His long ball on Saturday was one of the most remarkable home runs I have ever seen. 410 feet, backside, opposite field blast over the deep, deep, deep part of Baltimore, the enormous barrier at Camden Yards, the team erected a couple years ago. It was, I believe, the third home run by a left-handed hitter over the wall, like to the thick part of the ballpark. The other two were James Outman of the Dodgers and Adley Rutschman hit one. I missed the Adley one because he is a switch hitter, and so that fell through my baseball savant cracks. But Gunner became the third one. But the where Gunner hit it felt a little different because it was like basically left center field. I mean, it was right where Mr. Splash runs around.
Yeah, I would say this is not taking anything away from Gunner. If anything, it makes it more impressive. It was the perfect recipe for this home run, which is a 3-1 two-seamer from one of the hardest throwing relievers in the league. Like you do. That's what is insane about the Adley one. If you watch that one, is the pitch that it was on. Whereas this is like, you know, Munoz giving him some of that juice there. As well. But no, Gunner's just, he's up to 15 home runs, tied with Kyle Tucker for the most in the big leagues. And I mean, he's just a legitimate MVP candidate. It's really not,
which like that shouldn't be shocking. He was clear rookie of the year last year. He was on that trajectory. And we assume that it like is going to take time. Oh, you know, rookie of the year, and then he'll be like an all-star for a couple of years. And then when he's 27, he'll be an MVP candidate. Sometimes it just kind of happens. So they don't have to wait that long. They can just be that good right away. And Gunnar has absolutely been that. And, you know, I would say that the other thing from the series is Corbin Burns, right? I mean, when you have that going on Sunday that can clearly match. I mean, Kirby wasn't great. That obviously wasn't the best Kirby was going to throw. And it was a great example, too, where it's like, this is a team where, you know, sometimes Kirby can just dominate and it doesn't really matter that he's throwing every single pitch in the strike zone. But against better hitting teams, and he just doesn't want to walk you, and they have good game planning and good execution and really good left-handed hitters, they're going to hit him, you know, and he didn't walk anyone, but like that will happen sometimes. So he can get away with it against a lot of teams, but you know, sometimes not so much.
George Kirby's kryptonite is definitely Ryan O'Hearn. The
every
Rays,
right-handed pitcher's kryptonite at this point.
Hell yeah. The Rays played the Jays. The Rays took 2 out of 3. Good sign for Toronto though. Alek Manoah, 7 scoreless in their win on Sunday, his third start back. Yeah. Sure, great. Like, that's exactly what Alek Manoah looks like.
He looked pretty good in that start before until the very end. It seemed like he was just in there a couple batters too long. Great. You know, Manoah is street three, you know, back-to-back 7 innings. And he is one of those things where it's like, Alek Manoah, not the biggest concern for the Blue Jays right now. And credit to him. You know, credit to him. Alek Manoah being good is not going to save their season because they're 20-25 and they have so many problems on offense that like that's the issue. But that's awesome. And Chris Bassett's ERA is over 5, right? So now you have Gossman's ERA is near 5. So like there are a lot of other problems.
Their bullpen sucks.
Bullpen is not good. Yimi Garcia. Right? So like I'm happy for Alek Manoah. We're rooting for this guy. Like I want him to be good, and I think that'd be great if he can get back to it. But that is not he's no longer like the one. You know, last year was like, there's the weak link, Alek Manoah. Oh gosh, you know, get it together, Alek. Like everyone else is doing their part. It's like, no. Actually, now he's doing his thing and everyone else stinks.
I have a baseball crush I would like to announce.
Oh, okay. Who's who we got?
Johnny DeLuca.
Oh.
Okay. Johnny DeLuca, who
great pick.
Tampa traded for over the offseason from the Dodgers because the Dodgers just had too many good players. Johnny DeLuca, who could have just been James Outman, you know, there's a world where like James Outman is hurt last year and doesn't play. He's back in the minors, by the way, James Outman. DeLuca could just have been that guy. So DeLuca hits a huge go-ahead homer in the game on Saturday, but he just seems like I just love his aesthetic. Like, he's got piercing blue eyes, radical mustache that I'm jealous of, and an earring. And it's just not a vibe you see often from a big leaguer. Jordan, I'm sending you an Instagram photo of Johnny DeLuca. He's wearing a white tank top, playing a guitar on the ground of a bedroom that looks like it's in 1972. And he's got a little cutesy ramekin of blueberries on the ground, very organized. This is just, if you saw this picture, you'd be like, that's not a baseball player, but it is. It's Johnny freaking DeLuca, baby.
I mean, he's got this. This is like a montage here where we have a screenshot of an all-time low song. We've got him wearing a Vote for Pedro shirt. We've got him what appears to be showing an icy machine that is out of order. Like, this is like just kind of a, you know, a dude's rock kind of guy. He's now also playing center field for the Tampa Bay Rays and has a 904 OPS. I love when the Rays and Dodgers make trades, right? Because
it's like you're both right.
Yeah, well, and it's like Andrew Friedman is not trying to pull a fast one on the Rays, you know? Yeah. He's like, all right, we'll take Tyler Glass now, one of the best pitchers in the world, leading the baseball in strikeouts. Enjoy Johnny DeLuca. He will be great for you. We could honestly use him.
We could. But
you know what? I appreciate you. Like, as soon as when Neander's like, we want DeLuca, Friedman's like, yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. That's my guy, Eric. He knows a good ball player. So the last thing on DeLuca, just like this is more niche inside baseball, but like I remember asking around about him last season, and he's in the bucket of, you know, when you look at him, you don't think like, oh my God, freak athlete. He's apparently in the like, in the freak athletic testing, like force plate, like one of the best athletes to be. And the question was in college, it was like, okay, but is he good at baseball? And it was one of those. It doesn't look like it. Sometimes it's like, you look at him, it's like, oh my God, he looks like a football player. Can we teach him how to play baseball? Johnny DeLuca was more subtle. And it's a little funky the way he does it, but no, this is a great one. I'm so glad you brought him up.
Fall in love. It's okay, everybody. It's okay to fall in love with Johnny DeLuca or the like. All right, let's keep rolling down the list. Marlins over Mets taking 2 out of 3. With all due respect to the Marlins, this was just Eddie D. This is a very sad. Edwin Diaz on Saturday, the Mets are up 3 runs in the 9th, yeah, and he allows a game-tying 3-run shot to Josh Bell. It was his 3rd blown save of the week. He had 2 against the Phillies in that series. After the game, I believe Steve Gelbs reported that he was shedding some tears by his locker. Carlos Mendoza, their skipper, said that the closing situation is now fluid, which maybe that means that Diaz is going to keep being the closer because it's a reference to his tears, which are fluid.
Yeah. Yes. Putting the sad in Saturday was Edwin on that after that game. I mean, and by the way, you know, Nimmo hits a homer late on Sunday where it looked like they had a 1-run lead going to the 9th. And I was like, okay, well, they're probably not going to, you know, go ahead with Diaz here. But I was like, maybe, are they going to still want to throw him back out there? Now, fortunately for the Mets, now they did lose this series to the worst team in baseball, so that's not good. You know, fortunately, you got Reed Garrett. So in some ways, I'm almost surprised they didn't, you know, pivot to Reed Garrett, sooner. But, you know, the reason is that it's about $20 million is the reason difference. It's Reed Garrett making the minimum and Edwin Diaz being one of the highest paid closers of all time.
I'm going to give Edwin Diaz a pass because this happened in Miami, the house of his horrors, where I would imagine he has not been in that building since his leg exploded in the WBC. Probably didn't make that road trip last year. And so for him to not have a great time at the Lone Depot Park, that's okay. And just quickly on the crying, I like crying in baseball. I think
A League of Their Own
is a great movie, but the no crying in baseball line, I hate it. I tell my little leaguers, like, you get to cry for a minute. You get a minute, like, be as sad as you want. Let it eat you. But the second you get back out there, you got to flush it. And Edwin Diaz would be the same thing. So,
and yeah. And the other thing with Edwin is it's like, we've watched him be the best closer in the league and then horrible and then come back from that. Like, we've watched him do this 100 times. So, like, it's frustrating and it's upsetting because we always rooted for Edwin. But it doesn't mean like, oh, he's never going to be a good closer again. Like, no, he will.
Last thing on this series, did you see Skip eviscerate Sixto Sanchez in the press conference on Sunday?
Yeah, that was great. Basically, so, Sixto Sanchez sucked in the first inning, and Sixto, who is inexplicably in the Marlins rotation now, that's kind of where the season's at. Skip was like, yeah, like that's not good enough. And if you want to be in the big leagues and you want to start in the big leagues, you have to figure it out. And it was great. It's like Skip's like, what does he have to hold back at this point? Like the whole point of the season, honestly, at this point, the best thing Skip can do is to give it to his young players as real as it gets. And this is a good example of that, I think.
Angels taking 2 out of 3 over the Rangers. The Rangers, man, they are just neutral.
They're just not. They're not awesome, as our friend Mike Rooney says.
They're not definitively awesome.
No. They're not, you know, bad.
You know, when you learn to drive a car and the car, you like learn about neutral. And before you learn to drive, you don't realize that if you don't press the gas pedal, that the car will move forward anyway. That was a shock to me when I started driving, that you have to brake at lights.
Right.
I thought that when you're not moving, you're just not moving.
How about that?
You're going forward just very slowly, without any real zest, and that's what the Rangers have been so far this year. Jose Soriano for the Angels, that guy's legit. Awesome in their win on Sunday. Like, so much has been horrible for the Angels, but he and Joe Adell being good baseball players is great. I don't want to talk about the series anymore. Speaking about another series I don't want to linger on, the Tigers taking 2 out of 3 from the Diamondbacks. Okay. The Diamondbacks and the Diamondbacks and the Rangers World Series hangover is real. Mix in a liquid IV, no free ads.
Yeah,
just come on.
Yeah, really, I mean, Tigers waxed them on Friday and Saturday. And then yesterday, you know, D-backs salvaging that Sunday game. But I don't know, man. You know, I was around the D-backs, Corbin Carroll, it's up and down. I don't know. Again, they benefit because the Giants and Padres, like we just said, we've already said this five times on the show. National League, not great. So it doesn't really matter that much, but like they're still in it. Just like to see a hot streak. Would like to see a nice little win streak where you win two, maybe three, maybe even four games in a row. Would be really cool to see from the Diamondbacks of Arizona. Tigers, nice to see from them, especially for their offense, which has been so bad.
Jack Flaherty, more like back Flaherty.
Jack Flaherty's been, he's been tremendous.
Two more.
Yes. Two more.
Astros over the Milwaukee Brewers. This was a big statement series, baby. Houston is now only 3.5 back of a wild card spot. I tried to tell you all. I said, don't jump off this bandwagon. Not that there's any neutrals on the Astros bandwagon. But, you know, this team is inevitable, and they were playing pretty well. They were just getting unlucky, and they take 2 out of 3 at home from the Brewers. Jake Meyers is on an absolute heater right now. Kyle Tucker might win the MVP in the American League. And the Astros are clawing their way back into the mix. William Contreras is just spectacular, though.
Yeah, I mean, William Contreras has been the best catcher in baseball. His 13 pitch at-bat against Verlander and homering on Saturday, big part of their win. Brewers really good, so not really worried about Milwaukee. I mean, you said I don't think the Astros were necessarily getting unlucky. Like they were pitching terribly, and I will say I'm glad you mentioned that though, because it made me curious about the run differential. Their run differential is all the way up to -6. They are almost, they have a decent chance they're back in positive run differential territory by the end of this week. And yeah, four games back to the Mariners. Like, you're right, they're 21-26. Like they have scratched off some series wins. This week they have the Angels coming to town, so that's a decent opportunity to continue the momentum there. So credit to them. Milwaukee's still a very, very good team. But Houston, slowly but surely.
And in a rematch of the 2013 World Series, the first World Series game I ever attended, the Cardinals took 2 out of 3 from the Boston Red Sox in the Lou. Rafi Devers, 5 straight games with a home run. But the big news here was the Cardinals offense waking up. They had 4 home runs on Friday. Everyone in their lineup got a hit on Saturday. Starting to turn that thing around. Again, the NL is so soft. A hot 2 weeks from St. Louis, and they're just like back in the mix. Red Sox, the Tyler O'Neill homers on Sunday and his return to St. Louis. But we have other things to talk about as it relates to the St. Louis Cardinals. Let's actually begin with the City Connects that dropped this morning on Monday morning. Love them. Absolutely love these. I thought the Cardinals could and were going to biff this and be too boring. I think they hit the nail on the head. The hats, as always, with the 3-letter abbreviation is whatever, but the unis themselves, heck yeah.
Listen, the birds on the bat, even before we knew City Connects were a thing, were always the strength of the Cardinals brand. And to lean into that and to go with the tagline, the birds, the bat, the Lou, is very, very strong. And I know as we're going to transition here to the next Cardinals-related topic, Jake certainly has some St. Louis ties. He's wearing his Wash U St. Louis attire this morning as a Bears alum. But that is, and which helped you, I think, understand and more quickly identify some of the other parts of this jersey, if you maybe wanted to highlight.
Yeah. So, you know, I went to college in St. Louis, spent 4 years there, have fond feelings towards the city. And something I made a bunch of jokes about, like, the Philly City Connect and how no one in that city cares about the flag. And I don't really know that because I'm not from Philly. I've never lived in Philly, but I did get a sense from people who live there that that was like not a thing. The flag in St. Louis is definitely a thing. And the St. Louis flag is the confluence of the Missouri and Mississippi rivers kind of meeting in the middle of a fleur-de-lis, which I think a lot of people associate more with New Orleans, but it is on the St. Louis flag. And there's a huge French influence in St. Louis. St. Louis.
Makes sense.
And so the Cardinals City Connect uniforms have kind of that wavy motif from the river on the flag as the pinstripes, subtle pinstripes on the uniform. And I really love that. And then the Lou, like people in the Lou call it the Lou. Like that is a thing that's, you know, St. Louisians, St. Hooligans, what is it? The St. Louligans? They
Saint Lunatics?
The Saint? No. Yes, I know about the Saint Lunatics, but okay. I'm thinking about something else.
Okay,
that is a thing people say in the loo.
And I'm glad. Speaking of Saint Lunatics, obviously Nelly getting a big, very heavy influence and feature kind of in the promotional materials here. And that's our favorite part of this video is Nelly wearing Mucho World Series rings.
He's wearing like 11 rings.
Just outstanding stuff.
Murphy and, Lee not in the video though.
Yeah, that was a little bit disappointing. But it is going to make me want to listen to Nelly all day long and watch the Batter Up music video, which is one of our favorite pieces of baseball adjacent content that has ever been created. If you've not watched that, go watch it, please. Like, go watch the Batter Up music video for Nelly. That is a free advertisement for his Vivo page or whatever they call it on YouTube now.
I just gotta say, I really love these uniforms. The combo of like the Lou with the bird and the bat is really a good way to kind of, I thought the Cardinals were going to mess this up and be too boring, and I think they did a really good job. I love the stripe down the pants. That's enough about the Cardinals uniforms. Very quickly, one last topic before we say goodbye. I played college baseball. I was not very good at it relative to everybody else in the world, right? Like, when you play Division III college baseball, no one does that expecting to one day become a major leaguer. But on this morning, Monday, May 20th, my alma mater, the Washington University in St. Louis Bears, have a major league baseball player. One Mr. Ryan Lutis is going to be called up for his major league debut. Hopefully, he's a reliever, so hopefully he gets in the game, by the Cardinals. Ryan was a freshman the year after I graduated. We did not overlap on the Washington baseball team. However, it is a small world, and so we know each other decently well. Ryan was signed as an undrafted free agent by the Cardinals after the 2021 draft. He was signed by the Cardinals to get some, maybe he could get some outs for them and lower levels of the minors. But really, a big reason that they added Ryan was because he is a genius and is a very talented coder and developer who was working for the Cardinals front office building player-facing applications while pitching for them in the minor leagues. He shows up to spring training in 2022, and instead of throwing 90-92, he is throwing 96-98. And part of that is because he stopped having to take very difficult computer science classes and could focus on being a professional baseball player. Always holding down your velo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Happens to the best of us. You know, Kyle Hendricks should just stop coding and maybe his velo would come back. But Ryan...
Paul Skeens has never coded a day in his life.
Doesn't even know what a computer is. That's why the velo is so hot. Anyway, Ryan then spent 22 and 23 in the upper minors with the Cardinals. Had a kind of a rough year last year, but has been great so far in 2024. And it got the call to join the major leagues. I cannot even tell you how... proud I am of both him and the WashU baseball world that we have a major leaguer. We had a major leaguer last, I believe, 40 something years ago, a guy named Dax Malville.
No, Dal Maxville. You nailed it. Yep. He also played for the Cardinals.
Also played for the Cardinals. In the 60s.
Yep.
Yeah. And so it's just nuts, dude. It's nuts. Like, I can't. I'm wearing all my WashU baseball stuff. I'm so amped. I thought about flying out. I can't make it work, but I'm really speechless.
It's wild.
It's so cool.
And that's the other thing is like, it didn't really even take that long, you know, but that's kind of
relatively,
what, you know, 3 years ago, he was pitching basically 3 years ago, like this week, next week, he was pitching in the D3 World Series, against Johns Hopkins. And now he
will tonight. He has to get Gunnar Henderson out. Although he probably won't face Gunnar Henderson.
That would be if Ollie really wants to do some hazing. He throws him in there for the Gunnar Adley Ryan O'Hearn matchup.
Three lefty. Seems unfair.
Let's let JoJo Romero handle that.
Maybe
bring him in for James McCann. So we'll see. The Cardinals got the Orioles, and then they got the Cubs coming up this weekend. And, it's always hard to predict with relievers. Hopefully once you're throwing that hard and that well in AAA as a reliever, like, you're going to get up at some point. I I would imagine he'll go up and down a few more times this year, but maybe he'll stick and that'd be awesome. But it is an amazing thing. The fact that he's on the Cardinals too, is it would be amazing if he was doing it for the Rockies. But this is really, really, really special. So congrats to Ryan. Very excited about that. And yes, you have all the reason to be extremely, extremely proud.
The big leagues, Jordan. It's about me. No, I'm kidding.
You could go. Yeah, well, you're probably not going to make it anyway. This will be interesting though. Like, I with reliever debuts, it's hard to time, but hopefully family, friends, college, whatever, we don't have to get into it. But I'm just saying, like, imagine, let's say he gets into a game on Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if the Cardinals broadcast will cut to like the family and friends section. I don't know if we'll have people there and whatnot. And
they'll be there.
You being there would be so funny.
That is so funny. He's from Chicago, so his whole family will be there.
Okay. So we'll see. Hopefully they get some good TV time. All right. That is it for this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. Thank you, Jake, for co-hosting this with me. This was a great episode. We'll be back on Wednesday and Friday, because that's when this show comes out. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. And if you like the show, leave us a rating, review, YouTube comments. We've seen some very nice, kind YouTube comments. If you're watching the show on YouTube, let us know. Always like checking it out on there. So we really appreciate the support there. Thank you all for listening. Talk to you all on Wednesday.